The storm had finally broken outside. Maris thanked her luck and flew straight across the salt channel, skimming a few feet above the waves. There were dangers in flying so low, but she had no time to try for altitude, and Scylla's rarely came so close to land anyway. The flight was short enough. Phila was easy to find, but as Sina had predicted, reluctant to come.
"The waters make me sick," she muttered sourly. "And that boy on Sea Tooth, he thinks he's better than me anyway. Always has, the young fool, and now he comes crying to me for help."
But her daughter apologized for her, and soon after left for the ferry. On the way back, Maris indulged herself, enjoying the sensuous feel of the winds, as if to make up for the brusque way that she had used them to travel to Big Shotan. The storm clouds were gone now. The sun was shining brightly on the waters, and a rainbow arched across the eastern sky. Maris went in search of it, soaring up on a warm current of air that rose from Shotan, frightening a flock of summer fowl when she joined them from below. She laughed as they scattered in confusion, banking at the same time, her body responding out of habit to the subtle, shifting demands of the winds. They went in all directions, some towards Sea Tooth, some toward Eggland or Big Shotan, some out toward the open sea. And farther out she saw, she narrowed her eyes, trying to be sure, a Scylla, its long neck rearing out of the water to snap some unwary bird from the sky. No, there were several shapes. A hunting pack of sea cats, then? Or ships? She circled and glided out over the ocean, leaving the islands behind her. And very shortly she was sure. Ships, all right. Five of them sailing together, and when the wind had brought her closer, she could see the colours as well, the faded paint on the canvas sails, the ragged streamers flapping and fluttering above, the hulls all black. Local ships were less gaudy. These had come a long way. A trading fleet from Eastern. She swooped low enough to see the crew hard at work replacing sails, pulling in lines, and shifting desperately to stay on the good side of the wind. A few looked up and shouted and waved at her, but most concentrated on their labours. Sailing the open seas of Windhaven was always a dangerous business, and there were many months in the year when travel between distant island groupings was made flatly impossible by the raging storms. To Maris, the wind was a lover, but to the sailors it was a smiling assassin, pretending friendship only to gain the chance to slash a sail or drive a ship to splinters against an unseen rock. A ship was too large to play the games the flyers played. A ship at sea was always in a state of battle. But these ships were safe enough now. The storm was past, and it would be sunset at least before another one would be upon them. There would be celebration in Stormtown tonight. The arrival of an eastern trade fleet this size was always an occasion. Fully a third of the ships that tried the hazardous crossing between archipelagos were lost at sea. Maris guessed the fleet would make port in less than an hour, judging from their position and the strength of the winds. She wheeled above them once more, made very aware of her grace and freedom in the sky by their struggles below, and decided to carry the news to Big Shotan instead of returning immediately to Sea Tooth. She might even wait for them, she thought, curious about their cargo and their news. Maris drank too much wine in the boisterous tavern on the waterfront. It was pressed on her by the delighted customers, for she had been the first to bring word of the approaching fleet. Now everyone was at the docks, drinking and carousing and speculating about what the traders might be bringing. When the cry went up, first one voice, then many, that the ships were docking, Maris stood up, only to lurch forward as she lost her balance, made dizzy by the wine. She would have fallen, but the crush of bodies around her, rushing toward the door, kept her upright and bore her along. The scene outside was wild and noisy, and for a moment Maris wondered whether she'd been right to stay. She could see nothing, learn nothing in this excited, milling crowd. Shrugging, she slowly fought her way free of the mob and sat down on an overturned barrel. She might as well stay out of it and keep her eyes open for anyone from the ship who could supply her with news. She leant back against a smooth stone wall and folded her arms to wait. She woke unwillingly, annoyed by someone who would not stop pushing at her shoulder. She blinked her eyes several times, looking up into the face of a stranger.
"You are Maris," he said. "Maris the Flyer? Maris of Lesser Amberley?"
He was a very young man, with the severe, sculpted face of an ascetic, a closed, guarded face that gave away nothing. Set in such a face, his eyes were startling, large, dark, and liquid. His rust-coloured hair was pulled back sharply from a high forehead and knotted at the back of his skull.
Yes, she said, straightening. I'm Maris. Why? What happened?
I must have fallen asleep.
You must have, he said flatly. I came in on the ship. You were pointed out to me. I thought perhaps you'd come to meet me.
Oh, Maris looked quickly around. The crowds had thinned and all but vanished. The docks were empty except for a group of traders standing on a gangplank and a work crew of stevedores unloading chests of cloth.
I sat down to wait, she muttered. I must have closed my eyes. I didn't get much sleep last night.
There was something naggingly familiar about him, Maris thought groggily. She looked at him more closely. His clothing was Eastern in cut, but simple. Grey fabric, without ornamentation, thick and warm. A hood hanging down behind him. He had a canvas bag under one arm and wore a knife in a leather sheath at his waist.
"You said you were from the ship?" she asked.
"Pardon, I'm still only half awake. Where are the other sailors?"
"The sailors are drinking or eating, the traders off haggling, I would say," he answered. "The voyage was difficult. We lost one ship to a storm, though all but two of the crew were pulled from the water safely. Conditions afterward were crowded and uncomfortable. The sailors were glad to come ashore."
He paused.
"I'm no sailor, however. My apologies. I made a mistake. I do not think you were sent to meet me."
He turned to go. Suddenly Maris realized who he must be.
"Of course!" she blurted. You're the student, the one from Air Home.
He turned back to her. I'm sorry, she said. I'd forgotten all about you. She jumped down from the barrel.
My name is Val, he said, as if he expected it to mean something to her. Val of South Arran.
Fine, Maris said. You know my name, I'm sure. He shifted his bag uneasily. The muscles around his mouth were tense.
They also call me One Wing.
Maris said nothing, but her face gave her away.
I see you know me after all, he said, a bit sharply.
I've heard of you, Maris admitted. You intend to compete?
I intend to fly, Val said. I've worked for this for 4 years.
I see, Maris said coolly. She looked up at the sky, dismissing him. It was nearly dusk.
I've got to get back to Sea Tooth, she said. They'll be thinking I fell into the ocean. I'll tell them you arrived. Aren't you even going to speak to the captain? He asked sardonically. She's in the tavern across the way, telling stories to a gullible crowd.
He canted his head at one of the dockside buildings.
No, Maris said too quickly, but thanks.
She turned away, but stopped when he called after her.
Can I hire a boat to take me to Sea Tooth? You can hire anything in Stormtown, Maris answered, but it will cost you. There's a regular ferry from South Landing. You'd probably do best to stay the night here and take the ferry in the morning.
She turned away and moved off down the cobbled street, toward the flyer's quarters where she had stored her wings. She felt a bit ashamed of leaving him so abruptly when he had come so far in his desire to be a flyer, but she did not feel ashamed enough to turn back.
One Wing! She thought furiously. She was surprised he admitted to the name, and even more surprised that he would come to try again at a competition. He must know how he would be met.
You knew, Maris shouted, angry enough not to care if the students heard her. You knew and you didn't tell me.
Of course I knew,
Sina said. Her own voice was even, and her good eye was as impassive and fixed as her bad one.
I did not tell you earlier because I expected you would react like this.
Sina, how could you? Maris demanded. Do you really intend to sponsor his challenge?
If he is good enough, Sina replied. I have every reason to think he will be. I have serious qualms about sponsoring Care, but none whatsoever about Val.
Don't you know how we feel about him?
We?
The Flyers, Maris said impatiently. She paced back and forth before the fire, then paused to face Sina again. He can't possibly win again. And if he did, do you think it would keep Woodwings open? The academies are still living down his first win. If he won again, the landsmen of Seatooth would...
The landsmen of Seatooth would be proud and pleased, Sina said, interrupting. Val intends to take up residence here if he wins, I believe. It's not the landbound who call him One Wing. Only you Flyers do that.
He calls himself One Wing, Maris said, her voice rising once more. And you know why he got the name. Even during the year he wore his wings, he was never more than half a flyer. She resumed her pacing.
I'm less than half a flyer myself, the older woman said quietly, looking into the flames. A flyer without wings. Val has a chance to fly again, and I can help him.
You'd do anything to have a Woodwinger win in the competition, wouldn't you? Maris said accusingly. Sina turned up her wrinkled face, her good eye bright and sharp on Maris.
What did he do to make you hate him so?
You know what he did, Maris said.
He won a pair of wings, Sina said.
She seemed suddenly a stranger. Maris spun away from her, turning her back on the older woman to avoid the blind stare of that white and hideous eye. He drove a friend of mine to suicide, she said, in a low, intense voice, mocked her grief, took her wings, and all but pushed her off that cliff with his own hands.
Nonsense, Sina said. Ari took her own life.
I knew Ari, Maris said softly, still facing the fire. She hadn't had her wings very long, but she was a true flyer, one of the best. Everyone liked her. Val could never have defeated her in fair flight.
Val did defeat her.
She talked to me at the Eyrie just after her brother died, Maris said. She had seen it all. He was out in his boat, the lines out for moonfish, and she was flying above, keeping an eye on him. She saw the Scylla coming, but she was too far away. The winds tore the warning from her mouth. She tried to fly closer, but not in time. She saw the boat smashed to splinters, and the Scylla's neck came craning up out of the water with her brother's body in its jaws. Then it dove.
She should not have gone to the competition, Sina said simply.
It was only a week off, Maris said. She didn't intend to go that day she was at the Eyrie, but she was so forlorn. Everyone thought it would help cheer her up. The games, the races, the singing and the drinking. We all urged her to go, never dreaming that anyone would challenge her, not in her condition.
She knew the rules the council set, Sina insisted. Your council, Maris. Any flyer who appears at the competition is subject to challenge. And no healthy flyer may absent himself more than 2 years running.
Maris turned back to face the teacher once again, scowling. You talk of law. What of humanity? Yes, Ari should have stayed away. But she desperately wanted to go on with her life, and she needed to be among her friends and forget her pain for a while. We watched over her. She was clumsy then, as if she often forgot where she was and what she was doing. But we kept her safe. She was enjoying the competition. No one could believe it when that boy challenged her.
Boy, Sina repeated. You used the right word, Maris. He was 15.
He knew what he was doing. The judges tried to explain things to him, but he would not withdraw his challenge. He flew well and Ari flew badly, and that was it. One Wing had her wings. It was only a month later that she killed herself.
Val was half an ocean away at the time, Sina said. The flyers had no cause to blame him and shun him so, and no cause to do what they did the year after at the competition on Cull Hall. Challenge after challenge after challenge, from retired flyers and flyer children just come of age, and the best and the most talented at that.
There was no rule against multiple challenges then, Maris said defensively.
I notice that there is such a rule now, though. Where was the fairness in that?
It didn't matter. He lost to the second challenger.
Yes, a girl who had been practicing with wings since she was 7, whose father was the senior flyer on Little Shotan, was able to defeat him after he had already outflown one other challenger, Sina said.
She made an angry noise and rose slowly from her chair.
And what incentive did he have to fly well against her? There was another waiting to challenge next, 12 more after him, and you all told him he was only half a flyer anyway.
She moved toward the door. Where are you going? Maris demanded.
To dinner, Sina said gruffly. I have news to tell my students.
Val arrived the next morning during breakfast. Sina sat spooning up her eggs in a grim silence while the students glanced at her curiously. Maris was seated well away from the teacher, listening to Swella and brawny young Leanne try to convince a third student, a plain, quiet woman named Dana, the oldest of the woodwingers, to remain at the academy. Last night at dinner, Sina had announced the names of the 5 she would sponsor in challenge. Dana, discouraged, was planning to return home and resume the life she had abandoned. Swella and Leanne were not doing very well in their attempts to reconvert her. From time to time, Maris would add a few words about the importance of desire, but she found it hard to care. Truth was that Dana had begun much too late, and had never had real talent anyway. All conversation ended when Val entered. He took off his heavy woolen travelling cape and lowered his bag to the floor. If he took note of the sudden silence or the way the others stared at him, he gave no sign.
I'm hungry, he said. Have you any extra food?
That shattered the spell. Everyone began talking at once. Leia fetched him a platter of eggs and a mug of tea, and Sina rose and went to him, smiling, and led him back to her table to sit and eat at her side. Maris watched in silence, staring and feeling uneasy, until Swella tugged at the sleeve of her shirt.
I said, do you think he will win again? Swella asked.
No,
Maris said too loudly.
She rose abruptly. No one has lost a brother lately. How could he possibly win?
That afternoon, he made her regret her words. Cher and Leia had been up all morning, flying practice circuits while Sina yelled instructions from below, and Maris observed them from the air. In the afternoon, Swella and Damon were supposed to have use of the academy wings, but Sina had asked one of them to yield to Val, since he had been grounded for a month and needed the feel of the wind again. Swella had quickly volunteered. It was crowded on the observation platform when he emerged, wings strapped to his back and folded. Most of the students had come to see him fly. Maris, still winged, waited among them.
Damon, Sina was saying, I want you to practice skimming today. Fly as low over the water as you can. Keep your wings stiff and even. You wobble too much. You must improve, or someday you will fall in.
She looked at her other student.
Val, you'd be best to just unlimber now. Later there will be time for other exercises.
No, Val said. He was standing stiffly while 2 of the younger students unfolded and locked his wings.
I fly better when I must fly well. Set me a difficulty.
He looked at Damon, who was flexing in preparation for flight.
Or give me a race.
Sina shook her head.
You are premature, Val. I will say when the time has come for racing.
But Maris pushed forward, possessed of a sudden urge to see how good the infamous Val One Wing really was.
Let them race, Sina, she said. Damon has had exercise enough. He needs a competition.
Damon looked from Maris to Sina and back again,
clearly eager to race but unwilling to defy his teacher.
"I don't know," he said.
Val shrugged.
"As you will. I doubt you could give me much of a race in any case."
That was too much for Damon, who was fiercely proud of his status as one of Woodwing's best.
"Don't flatter yourself, One Wing," he snapped.
He lifted an arm and pointed across the waters to where the waves broke and foamed against a ridge of half-submerged stone.
"When we're both aloft, Amaris gives the word, 3 times there and 3 times back. Agreed?"
"Agreed," Val said, studying the distant rocks. Sina pursed her lips but said nothing. Hearing no further objections, Damon grinned and ran and leapt. The wind took him and lifted. He soared upward, did a stately circle over the shoreline, and passed above them, his shadow rippling across the stone. Val moved to the edge, his wings fully extended now.
"Your knife, Val,"
Srella said suddenly. The rest of them looked. His ornate blade, obsidian with beaten silver edges, was still in its sheath at his hip. Val reached down and pulled it free, looking at it curiously.
"What of it?" "Flyer tradition," Sina said. "No blade may be carried into the sky. Srella, take it. We will keep it safe for you."
Srella moved to obey, but Val gestured her away.
"This was my father's knife, the only decent thing he ever owned. I carry it everywhere."
He slid it back into its sheath.
It's flyer tradition," Srella said, her voice puzzled.
Val smiled sardonically.
"Ah, but I'm only half a flyer. Move back, Srella."
And when she moved back, he threw himself into the air. Maris walked to the outer edge of the platform to stand beside Senna and Srella, all of them watching Val as he spiraled upward to join Damon. Behind her, she could hear the others talking about him.
"One Wing," a voice said. Leanne, perhaps.
Damon had called him that too, after Val had mocked him. The Easterner wasted no time making enemies, Maris thought. She said as much to Sina.
"The Flyers wasted no time making an enemy of him," Sina replied.
Even her bad eye was turned upward toward the sky where Damon and Val now wheeled in great circles around each other, like two birds of prey searching for a weakness.
"You are to say the word, Maris," Sina reminded her.
Maris cupped her hands.
"Fly!"
she shouted, as loud as she could shout it. The wind took it and carried it up to them. Damon came out of his circle first, sweeping around and over the water in a slow, leisurely manner, as if he had all the time in the world. Val One Wing came just behind him, wide silver wings, weather-veining a bit, tilting first one way and then the other, as if he were not quite balanced. Both flyers kept low. Maris put a hand up to shade her eyes against the sunlight flashing from their wings. Halfway to the first turn, Damon was widening his lead, and Val began to rise.
"The wind is picking up," Sina commented.
Maris nodded. It felt like a crosswind as well. They'd have to fly. It would be no simple matter of letting the breeze carry them where they wished to go. Damon reached the rocks well ahead of his competition and began his turn. A ragged shout went up from the woodwingers. Damon was winning. But he lost time on his turn. He came around slow and too wide, faltering at one point when he faced head-on into the wind before he took command of it again. He seemed less steady coming back. Val began to tack well before the turn, changing his course as he climbed, not all at once, but in a series of small increments. He was much higher than Damon now, but substantially behind. When he came around at last, Damon was already halfway back, but Val's turn was sharper and cleaner than his rival's.
"Damon's beating him," Leanne called out.
Damon swept by above them.
"Hey, Damon,"
Leanne bellowed, hands cupped around his mouth.
"Go!"
Damon came around slowly, again the turn was too wide, and dipped his wing to acknowledge the cheers, but the gesture cost him. He lost the wind for an instant and slid down sharply and dangerously,
and when he passed in front of them, suddenly the bulk of the great rock fortress was between him and the prevailing wind. He drifted lazily, losing speed, and had to struggle to pull himself back up again. Val made no such mistake. He turned tightly, keeping high enough above them so he lost no portion of the wind, however small. And suddenly he seemed to be moving much faster as well. "Val has won it," Maris said suddenly. She hadn't meant to speak aloud, but no sooner had it come to her than the words were out. Sina was smiling. Swella looked baffled. "But Maris, look! Damon is well ahead." "Damon is just riding on the winds," Maris said. "Val is using them. He was searching for the right wind, and now he's found it. Watch, Swella." It didn't take long. Damon's lead shrank steadily as the two flyers moved out toward the rocks once more, and the woodwinger slid badly off course when he tried to come around more sharply than before. By the time he'd corrected himself, Val had reached the turnaround point. A few moments later, Damon seemed visibly startled as the shadow of Val's wings fell upon his own. Then the shadow moved in front of him. The students were quiet, even Leanne. "Give him my congratulations," Maris said. She turned and went back inside. Her room was cold and damp. Maris built a fire in the hearth and decided to heat the kivas she had bought in Stormtown. She was on her third cup, relaxing at last, when Sina entered unasked and took a seat. "How do the practices go?" Maris said.
"He has them all racing," Sina said. "Damon took it well enough, but he had no taste for another race, so he gave up his wings for the afternoon. They were all eager to try him."
She smiled, clearly proud of their eagerness.
"He defeated Cher and Jan handily, humiliated Care and Egon. Egon almost fell into the ocean. Swella flew him a close race, though. Stole all the tricks he used to defeat Damon. She's a clever girl, Swella."
"He flew six races?" Maris said.
"Seven," Sina said, smiling. "Leanne almost beat him. The wind is gusting now, very turbulent. It knocked Val around a bit. He's lean, not as strong as he could be. I'll have him work on that. Pull-ups, push-ups. And of course he was tired by then, but Leanne insisted. Leanne can handle rough winds. He's muscled like a Scylla. Sometimes the way he wrenches his wings around, I think he's yanking himself through the sky on sheer brawn. Val beat him anyway, though, very close. Then Leia wanted to race, but the storm was about to break, and I chased them all inside. What do you think of One Wing now, Maris?"
Maris poured the teacher a mug of kivas while she thought. "I think he can fly," Maris said at last. "I still don't like what he did to Ari. And I didn't like that business with his knife today, either. Yet I can't deny his skill."
"Will he win?"
Maris tasted her drink, let the sweet warmth flow down and into her. She closed her eyes briefly and leant back. "Perhaps," she said. "I can think of a dozen flyers who don't handle themselves as well as he did today. I can also think of a dozen who are better than he, who know all his tricks and more. Tell me whom he's to challenge, and I'll tell you his chances. Beyond that, well, speed is only one skill of a flyer. The competition will judge grace and precision as well."
"Fair enough," Sina said. "Will you help me ready him?"
Maris stared down at the grey stone floor. "You place me in a difficult position," she said, "and for the sake of someone I don't even like."
"So only those you approve of deserve to fly," Sina said. "Is that the principle you struggled for 7 years ago?"
Maris raised her head, meeting Sina's gaze. "You know better. Those who fly best deserve the wings."
"And you admit Val is skilled," Sina said.
She sipped at her kivas while she waited for an answer. Maris nodded reluctantly. "But if he should win, the others will not forget the past. You call him Val, but he'll always be One Wing to them."
"I'm not asking you to fly guard on him for the rest of his career," Sina said tartly. I ask only that you help me now. Help Val to get his wings.
What do you want me to do?
Nothing more than you've already done for the others. Show him his mistakes. Teach him the things your years as a flyer have taught you, as you would teach a child of your own. Advise him, push him, challenge him. He's too skilled to gain much by pitting himself against my woodwingers, and you saw today how little he is willing to listen to me. I'm old and crippled, and I fly only in my dreams. But you are an active flyer, and reputed one of the best. He will heed you.
I wonder, Maris said.
She drained the last inch of kvass from her mug and set it aside.
Well, I suppose I must give him my advice, if he will take it.
Good, Sina said.
She nodded briskly and stood up.
I thank you. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have work to tend to.
At the door, she paused and half turned.
I know this is hard for you, Maris. Perhaps if you knew Val better, you might feel some sympathy between you. He admires you, I know.
Maris was startled by that, but tried not to show it. I can't admire him, she said. And the more I see of him, the less I see to sympathize with or like.
He is young, Sina said. His life has not been easy, and he is obsessed with winning back his wings. Not so very different from you some years back.
Maris choked down her anger to keep from launching into a tirade about just how different Val One Wing was from her younger self. She would only sound spiteful. The silence lengthened, and then Maris heard Sina's soft, uncertain footsteps taking her away. The next day the final training began. From sun-up until sundown, the six challengers flew. Of those who would not compete this year, some went home to visit families on Seatooth or the Shotans or other nearby islands. The others, whose homes lay long, dangerous distances away, sat perched on bare rock to watch their fortunate companions and dream of the day when they, too, would have a chance to win their own wings. Sina stood below on the launching deck, shouting up advice and encouragement to her fledglings, sometimes leaning on a wooden cane, more often using it to gesture and command. Maris, winged, flew guard, circling, watching, yelling cautions. She put Sweller, Damon, Cher, Leia, and Care through their paces, racing against them two at a time, calling upon them to perform the sort of aerial acrobatics that might impress the judges. Val was given a chance to use a pair of wings as often as any of the others, but Maris found herself observing him in silence. He'd been in competition twice before, she reasoned. He knew what would be expected. To treat him as she did the other woodwingers would be to condescend. But mindful of her promise to Sina, she studied his flying closely, and that night at dinner she sought him out. Only one hearth was lit in the common room, and the benches seemed strangely empty. When Maris arrived, one table was crowded with the students who would not be competing, and Sina sat at a second, talking in an animated fashion with Cher, Leia, and Care. Sweller and Val were alone at the third table. Maris let Damon fill her platter with his fish stew, then drew herself a glass of white wine and went to join them. "How is the food?" she asked, as she sat down across from Val. He looked at her evenly, but she could read nothing in his large dark eyes.
"Excellent," he said. "But even at Erholm we never had cause to complain about the meals. Flyers eat well, even those with wooden wings."
Sweller, seated next to him, pushed a chunk of hoofkin across her plate with marked indifference.
"This isn't that good," she said. "Damon always makes everything so bland. You should be here when I'm cook, Val. Southern food has a lot of spices."
Maris laughed. "Too many, if you want my opinion."
"I'm not talking about spices," Val said. "I'm talking about food. This stew has four or five different kinds of fish in it, and chunks of vegetables. And I think there's wine in the sauce. There's plenty of it, and not a bit of it is rotten. Only flyers and landsmen and rich traders would quibble about food like this."
Sweller looked wounded. Maris frowned and put down her knife.
Most flyers eat simply, Val. We can't afford to get fat.
I've been served fish that stank, and I've eaten fish stew that was entirely fishless, Val said coolly. I grew up on scraps and leavings from flyer plates. I will be happy to spend the rest of my life eating as simply as a flyer.
There was an infinite amount of sarcasm in the way he said simply. Maris flushed. Her own true parents had not been wealthy, but her father had fished the sea off Amberley, and they'd always had enough to eat. After his death, when she'd been adopted by the flyer, Russ, she'd always had enough of everything. She drank some of her wine and changed the subject.
I wanted to talk to you about your turns, Val.
Oh?
He swallowed his last piece of fish and shoved the empty plate away.
Am I doing anything wrong, Flyer?
His voice was so flat that Maris found it difficult to tell if the sarcasm was still there or not.
Not wrong, exactly. But given a choice, I noticed that you always turned downwind.
Why?
Val shrugged. That's easier.
Yes, Maris said, but not better. You'll come out of a downwind turn with more speed, but it will also take more room, and you tend to roll more on a downwind turn, particularly in high winds.
An upwind turn is difficult in high winds, Val said.
It requires more strength, Maris agreed, but you need to work on your strength. You should not avoid difficulty. A habit like always turning downwind may seem harmless, but the time will come when you have to turn upwind, and you should be able to do it well.
Val's expression was as guarded as ever.
I see, he said.
Emboldened, Maris raised a touchier subject. Something else. I saw that you wore your knife again today during practice.
Yes.
Next time don't, Maris said. I don't think you understand. No matter what the knife means to you, this is a matter of flyer law. No blades may be worn in the sky.
Flyer law,
Val said icily. Tell me, who gave the flyers the right to make laws? Do we have farmers' law? Glassblowers' law? The landsmen make the law, the only law. When my father gave me that knife, he told me never to put it aside. But I did put it aside, during the year I had my wings. I obeyed your flyer law. It did nothing but shame me. I was still one wing. Well, I was a boy then, and cowed by flyer law, but I'm not a boy now. I choose to wear my knife.
Srella looked at him wonderingly. But Val, how can you disregard flyer law if you're going to be a flyer?
I never said I was going to be a flyer,
Val replied. Only that I intend to win wings and fly. His eyes moved from Maris to Srella.
And Srella, you're not going to be a flyer either, even if you should win. Remember that if it comes to pass. You'll be as I was, a one wing.
That's not true, Maris said angrily. I was not born of flyers, but they've accepted me all the same.
Have they?
Val said. He smiled a thin, ironic smile and rose from the bench.
You'll excuse me. I have to rest. Tomorrow I must practice my upwind turns, and I'll need all my strength for that.
When he was gone, Maris reached across the table to take Srella by the hand, but the girl gave her a troubled look and pulled away.
I have to go too, she said, and Maris was left alone.
She sat for a long time thinking, and it was not until Damon approached her that she remembered the half-eaten meal on her plate.
Everyone else is gone, he said softly. Are you going to finish, Maris?
Oh, she said. No, I'm sorry. I'm afraid I got distracted and let it get cold.
She smiled and helped Damon with the plates, then left him to clean up the common room, and set off down the dank stone corridors in search of Val's room. She found it after only one wrong turning, and her anger grew as she walked. She was determined to have it out with Val. But it was Srella who answered her impatient knocking.
"What are you doing here?" Maris said, startled.
Srella hesitated, shy and uncertain, but Val's voice came from within the room.
"She doesn't have to answer that," he said.
"No, of course not," Maris said, abashed. She had no right even asking, she realized. She touched Srella on the shoulder.
I'm sorry. Can I come in? I want to talk to Val.
Let her in,
Val said, and Srella smiled at Maris tentatively and opened the door. Like all the rooms in the academy, Val's was small, damp and cold. He'd lit a fire in the hearth to drive some of the chill away, but so far it had been only partially successful. Maris noticed how bare the room was, completely lacking in the personal touches and trinkets that would tell a visitor something about the person who lived here. Val was on the floor before the fire, doing push-ups. He'd thrown his shirt over the bed and was exercising bare-chested. Well, he said, without slackening his pace. Maris was staring, sickened by what she saw. The whole of Val's back was crisscrossed by lines and thin white scars, mementos of long-ago beatings. She had to force her eyes away from them to remember why she'd come. "We need to talk, Val," she said. He came bounding to his feet, smiling at her and breathing hard. "Hand me my shirt, Srella," he said. Then, after he'd pulled it on, "What do you want to talk about?" His hair, unbound now, fell to his shoulders in a rust-coloured waterfall, softening the severity of his face and giving him an oddly vulnerable look. "May I sit?" Maris asked. Val gestured toward the only chair in the room, and when Maris sat on it, lowered himself onto the backless stool near the fire. Srella sat on the edge of the narrow bed. "I don't want to play games with you, Val," Maris resumed. "We have a lot of work to do together."
"What makes you think I'm playing games?" he asked.
"Listen to me," she said. "I realize that you are bitter toward the Flyers. They made you an outcast, branded you with a mocking, insulting name, and stripped you of your wings, perhaps unfairly, with multiple challenges. But if you let that poison your feelings toward all Flyers forever, you will be the loser for it. Win your wings back in the competition, and you will be living with, competing with, and associating with Flyers for much of the rest of your life. If you refuse to allow them to be your friends, then you will have no friends. Is that what you want?" Val was unmoved.
"Windhaven is full of people, and only a few of them are Flyers. Or don't you count the landbound?"
"Why are you so determined to be hateful? You waste no time making enemies. Maybe you feel the Flyers have wronged you, and maybe you're right, but quarrels are seldom one-sided. Try to understand that. What you did to Ari was not without wrong, either. If you want to be forgiven for that, then forgive the Flyers for what they did. Accept, and you may be accepted." Val smiled his thin-lipped smile.
"What makes you think I want to be accepted? Or forgiven? I've done nothing that requires forgiving. I challenge Ari again. Unfortunately, she isn't available this year."
Maris was suddenly speechless with rage. "Val," Srella said in a small, shocked voice. "How can you say that? She killed herself."
"Landbound die every day," Val told her, his voice softening a bit. "Some of them kill themselves, too. No one makes a cause out of that, or sings about it, or avenges their squalid little suicides. You have to shield your own flank, Srella. My parents taught me that. No one else will do it for you."
His eyes went back to Maris.
"I've met your brother, you know," he said suddenly.
"Cole?" she said, surprised.
"He visited South Arran 7 years ago, on his way to the Outer Islands. There was another singer with him, an older man."
"Barion," Maris said, "Cole's mentor."
"They stayed a week or two, singing in the dockside taverns, waiting for a ship to take them farther east. That was the first time I heard about you. Maris of Lesser Amberley. You were my hero for a time. Your brother sings a pretty little song about you."
7 years ago," Maris said. "That must have been right after the council."
Val smiled. "It was the first we had heard of it. I was around 12, just short of the age when a Flyer child would be taking up his wings. But of course, I had no hope of that. Until your brother came to my island and sang about you and your council and your academies.
When Air Home opened a few months later, I was one of the first students. I still loved you then for making it all possible.
And what happened?
Val half turned on his stool, stretching his hands out toward the fire. I grew disillusioned. I thought that you'd opened the world to everyone where once it had belonged only to flyers. I felt such a kinship with you. I was naive.
He turned back again, and Maris shifted uncomfortably under his intense, accusing gaze.
I thought we were alike, he continued. I thought you wanted to break open the rotten flyer society. I found out I was wrong. All you ever wanted was to be part of the whole thing. You wanted the fame and the status and the wealth and the freedom. You wanted to party on the Erie with the rest of them and look down on the dirt-digging landbound. You embrace what I despise. The irony of it, though, is that you can't be a flyer, no matter how much you want to. No more than I can be a flyer, or Srella here, or Damon, or any of the rest of them.
I am a flyer, Maris said quietly.
They let you play at it, Val said, because you try so very hard to fit in, to be just like them.
But both of us know that they don't really trust you or accept you as they'd accept one of their own.
You have your wings, but you're still suspect, aren't you? Whether you admit it or not, you were the first one wing, Maris.
Maris stood up. His words had made her furious, but she didn't want to lash out at him or lose her dignity by quarrelling with him in front of Srella. You're wrong, she said, as calmly and quietly as she could manage. But then she found she had no words to refute him with. I feel sorry for you, Val, she continued. You hate the flyers, and you have contempt for the landbound, for everyone who is not yourself. I don't want your respect or your gratitude. It's not just the privileges of flyer society you're rejecting, it's the responsibilities as well. You're totally selfish and self-absorbed. If I hadn't promised Sina, I'd have nothing more to do with helping you get your wings. Good night. She left the room. Val didn't move or call her back. But as the door swung shut behind her, she heard him speaking to Srella.
You see, he said flatly.
And that night the dream came to Maris again, and she twisted and fought and woke with the bedclothes wrapped about her soaked with sweat. It had been worse than before. She'd been falling, falling endlessly through still air, and all around were other flyers, soaring on their silver wings and watching, and not one of them moved to help.
Day after day the practice continued. Sina grew hoarse and intense and short-tempered, and presided over all like a tyrannical landsman. Damon sharpened his turns, and heard long lectures every day on flying with his head and not just his arms. Srella worked on launchings and landings and acrobatics, looking for grace to match her stamina. Cher and Leia, already graceful, stayed in the air for hours at a time in high winds, trying to build endurance. Care worked on everything. And Val Onewing did what he would. Maris watched him from afar as she watched all of them, and said little. She answered what questions he had, gave advice on the rare occasions that he asked for it, and treated him always with careful, distant courtesy. Sina, absorbed entirely in the flying of her protégés, noticed none of it, but the woodwingers picked up their cues from Maris and carefully kept their distance from Val. He aided the process himself. He had a sharp tongue and no compunction about making enemies. He told Care to his face that he was hopeless, sending the boy into a fit of sulking, and he mocked proud, stubborn Damon endlessly, defeating him again and again in informal races. The students, led by Damon and Leanne and a few others, soon began calling Val One Wing openly, but if that bothered him he gave no sign. Val's isolation was not quite total. If the others shunned him, he at least had Srella. She was more than merely polite to Val. She sought him out, asking for his advice, ate with him, and always when Sina paired students off to race, Srella was the first to challenge Val. Maris saw sense in her actions,
Pitting her skills against those of a stronger flyer would help her learn and overcome her weaknesses faster than anything else. And Srella, Maris knew, was determined to win her wings this year. There were other, less practical reasons why Srella might be drawn to Val as well. The shy southern girl had always been a bit out of place among the woodwingers, all of whom were westerners. She cooked differently, dressed differently, wore her hair differently, spoke with a slight accent, even told different tales when the students gathered together for storytelling. Val Onewing from Easton was similarly displaced, and it was natural, Maris told herself, that the two odd birds would fly together. Still, it made Maris uneasy to see the two talking together. Srella was young and impressionable, and Maris did not want her picking up Val's ideas. Besides, too close an association with Onewing would make her unpopular among the other flyers, and Srella was vulnerable enough to be hurt by that. But Maris pushed those worries to the back of her mind and did not interfere. There was no time now for personal fretting. She had to train these woodwingers for the real thing. At the end of every day of training, Maris raced each student individually. On the second day before the scheduled departure for the competition, the wind was strong from the north, and its cold edge seemed to slice through the shivering students. It grew colder by the minute. "You don't need to wait," Maris told them. "It's too cold for standing around. After I race you, help the next student with the wings, and then you can go on inside." The exertion of flying kept Maris warm, but it also tired her. Finally, bone-weary and beginning to really feel the cold, Maris saw that she was alone on the flyer's cliff with Val. Her shoulders slumped. She had not expected him to wait. And to race him now, when he was fresh and she was so tired. She looked up at the swirling purple sky and licked dried salt from the corners of her mouth. "It's late for flying," she said. "The winds are wild and it's getting dark. We can race another time." "The winds will make it that much more of a challenge," Val said. His eyes rested coolly on hers, and Maris knew with a sinking heart that he'd been waiting a long time for this moment. "Sina may worry," she began weakly.
"Of course, if flying against the woodwingers has worn you out."
"I once flew 30 hours without a rest," she said, stung. "An afternoon of play doesn't wear me out." His smile mocked her. She saw that she had fallen into his trap. "Get your wings on," she said. She did not offer to help him, but it was obvious that he was accustomed to putting on his wings unaided. Maris tried unobtrusively to flex some resilience back into her muscles, telling herself that a victory for him, with her as tired as she was and the wind so capricious, would mean nothing, and he must know that.
"The usual? Twice out and back?"
Maris nodded, glancing across the grey, churning waves to the distant spire of rock they all used as a marker. How many times had she flown out there today? 30? More? It didn't matter. She would fly the last 2 laps as if they were the first, her pride insisted.
"Who will judge us?" she asked.
Val snapped the last 2 joints of his wings into place.
"We'll know," he said. "That's all that matters. I'll launch first. You call ready. Agreed?"
"Yes." She watched as with a few swift steps Val moved to the edge of the cliff and leapt outward. His body bobbed on the conflicting winds like a small boat on rough water until he took command, veered off to the right, and began to climb. Maris took a breath and let her mind clear. She ran lightly forward and pushed off. For one brief moment she fell, then her wings caught the winds and she was buoyed upward. She took her time coming to Val's level, climbing in a ragged spiral, needing those few moments to get the feel back, so her tired body would know how best to use the winds. When she came up to him, the two of them circled warily around and around each other, struggling to hold position amid the restless winds. Her eyes met his. And then she looked away, straight ahead, toward the rock that was their marker.
"Ready? Go!"
go!"
she shouted, and they were off. The winds were strong but turbulent. The prevailing north wind, interrupted by gusts from one direction, then from another. The whole eastern sky was a mass of darkening clouds, towering shapes that threatened a storm. Maris gave them an uneasy glance and started to climb again, looking for a steadier, faster wind in the heights. She fought constantly to keep on course. The gusts pushed her first one way, then another, demanding constant attention and frequent half-turns and corrections. She could not afford any detours. Although she did not look for him, she often caught sight of Val. He sometimes flew below her, but more often he was beside her, disconcertingly close. He flew well, and it did not help Maris to reflect that he was using the advice she had given him. There would be nothing easy or simple about defeating him, she thought. Then Val surged ahead. A shock of adrenaline coursed through Maris, and she flung her body to the left to catch the changing wind that had given him his push. They might call him One Wing, but he knew how to use both wings in the air. Flying races against woodwingers had made her soft, Maris thought. Her responses were dulled. Ahead of her, just barely out of reach, Val's wings swept around the spike of rock. He turned downwind, Maris noted, coming around wide and rocking just a little, but picking up speed as he did so. Then he was headed back toward the cliff. Determined to overtake him, Maris flew dangerously close to the rock. Her wingtip grazed the spire, and that slight scraping threw her sideways, off balance, for a crucial moment. She sheered downward crookedly, the wind lost to her, stalling, her heart pounding in her throat, before she finally gained control again. Val had put more distance between them. She was only grateful that he hadn't seen her blunder. She had lost altitude, but she caught a strong updraft above the rocks, and suddenly Maris was rising again. She flew recklessly, thinking only of the immediate need for speed, searching and shifting until she found a steady current she could use. It moved her close to Val, but she was so intent on passing him that she barely noticed the approach of land, and abruptly she was clutched by a sinker, a cold pocket of air that yanked her down like an icy hand from below. Val somehow flew clear of it, found some impossible lift that shoved him up and further ahead, while Maris checked her abrupt descent and banked to free herself from the downdraft. He circled above the fortress, gauging the winds by the thin smoke rising from the academy's chimneys, and was on his way back out again, higher and higher, before Maris had finished her recovery. It was as if the sky itself favoured Val this evening, Maris thought resentfully as she came around. The winds toyed with her and stalled her, gusting unpredictably every time she tried to ride them, but let Val fly them freely. He seemed almost unaware of the dangerous uncertainty of the gales, somehow finding amid the constant shifting the sure and fluid wind on which to glide. Maris knew then that she had lost the race. Val was high above her, knowing that altitude often meant speed, and it would take her too long to reach his height, even if she should find the winds she needed to take her there. She tried to make up the distance between them, but the struggle against the ragged gusts wore her out, and the awareness that already it was too late took the heart out of her efforts. Val lost some time descending for his landing, but still passed over the cliff the second, final time, more than a full wingspan ahead of her. Clearly he had won. Maris was too drained by the flight to smile at him when they had both come down, in the soft sand of the landing pit, too depressed to pretend that it didn't matter. In silence she removed her wings as hastily as she could, her numbed fingers often slipping and fumbling uselessly at the straps. At last, still without a word having passed between them, Maris slung her wings over her shoulder and turned toward the weathered fortress. Val blocked her way. "I won't tell anyone," he said. Her head jerked up, and she felt a hot flush of embarrassment rise in her cheeks. "I don't care what you say, about anything, to anyone." "Oh?" His faint smile taunted her, made her realize how hollow her words rang. Obviously she did care. "It wasn't a fair trial," she snapped,
and instantly regretted the feeble, childish complaint. No, Val agreed, his tone flat enough so Marius had no clue as to whether irony was intended. You were flying all day while I was well rested. I could never have beaten you if we were both fresh. We all know that.
I've lost before, Marius said, trying hard to control her emotions. It doesn't bother me.
I see, said Val. Good. He smiled again.
Marius shrugged irritably, feeling the wings scrape her back. I'm very tired, she said. Please excuse me.
Certainly.
Val moved out of her way, and she trudged past him, crossed the sand wearily, and began climbing the flight of worn, moss-covered steps that led to the fortress's seaward entrance. But at the top, some impulse made her hesitate and turn before ducking inside. Val had not followed her. He still stood out on the sand, a gaunt, solitary figure in the gathering dusk, his folded wings propped lightly on one shoulder. He was looking off over the sea, where a lone scavenger kite sailed in ragged circles against the clouds of sunset. Marius shivered and went inside.